is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening, Africa. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jason Patinkin, and here's what's coming up.
Just human budgets. Last month or this month is totally different. It's going to be totally different 3 weeks or 2 weeks down the line because everything goes up. Fuel goes up, goods and services, but just working for food only.
That's Zimbabwean mother Fortunate Moyo speaking on the challenges of the country's fast-rising cost of living. This story and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Our top story today, doctors say a third wave of COVID-19 has started in South Africa. South Africa is the hardest hit country on the continent with 1.6 million confirmed cases and 55,000 deaths. The country's vaccine rollout is supposed to begin Monday. That's amid concerns of a new coronavirus variant emerging to worsen the third wave's potential impact. Darren Taylor has more.
During the past few weeks, South Africa's health department has given the Johnson & Johnson, or J&J, jab to vulnerable health workers. These immunizations have been happening under a special study, as the vaccination didn't yet have the necessary approval from various international regulatory authorities. The vaccination rollout has been delayed repeatedly. The government was initially unable to secure supplies. Then, when it did get a big batch of the AstraZeneca vaccine a few months ago, it proved to be largely ineffective against the highly infectious variant circulating in South Africa, the 501Y.V2. The health department says people over 60 will be first in line for the Pfizer jab, but department spokesman Dr. Keith Clutty says only a minimal number of senior citizens have actually signed up.
Yes, we are concerned and we're going on an extra drive to encourage people to be registered on the system.
He says people have become so used to vaccines just not being available that they're unaware the shots will be ready soon. Then, adds Clutty, a lot of citizens, especially the elderly, simply don't have a way to register.
It is an electronic registration, so many people do not have access to the electronic means that you require to be able to do it. And we are now encouraging young people, everybody, to assist somebody over the age of 60. And it's also been access to internet. So now there's also a WhatsApp link. There's also just a toll-free number link in terms of the USSD system.
As a result, says Clutty, his department's not too concerned about the fact that relatively few people over 60 have registered to get injected.
We also expect that once the vaccination starts, which has happened everywhere in the world and also happened with the healthcare workers, the interest for registration will also start picking up and therefore we will also...
He says with infections once again increasing across the country, it's imperative that senior citizens get their shots as soon as possible, especially because some of South Africa's top medical scientists, like Professor Salim Abdul Karim, are warning that a new coronavirus variant could be on the way.
We have a situation where we've already had it once before. There's always going to be that probability that it'll happen again. And so our own variant is as much a concern to me as a variant coming in from other countries.
Karim's referring to the variants first found in the United Kingdom and India, which are now also circulating in South Africa.
I am less concerned about the other country variants at the moment because all of the variants we're seeing all over the world are not as severe or as concerning as the one we have here.
With the vaccine rollout looming, civil society groups are concerned about its organization, or rather, lack thereof. During the past few days, many people who were not health workers and therefore didn't qualify to get the J&J jab circumvented the system and got vaccinated. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Zimbabwe's city dwellers are likely to suffer potential food shortages and other hardships as the cost of living in the country surges. That conclusion is part of a new report and analysis from FuseNet, which is the Famine Early Warning Systems Network created by the U.S. Agency for International Development. From Bulawayo, Eddie Gondo has the story.
According to the report, many urban families in Zimbabwe, and especially the poor, will experience financial difficulties throughout the year. Many factors, including high rate of inflation, are contributing to the high cost of living and growing poverty in many cities. Inflation has declined since the middle of last year, but it remains steep, registering 194% in April. Meanwhile, in the parallel market, exchange rates are over 30% higher than the official rate. According to the National Statistics Organization, ZIMSTAT, the cost of living in March stood at 26,560 Zimbabwean dollars or US $320 for a family of five. That amount is far higher than the salary of the lowest paid civil servants who earn 17,000 Zimbabwean dollars or US $205 per month. From those salaries, many city dwellers must pay for rising fuel prices, which today stand at between US $1.25 and $1.39 per liter, compared to around US $1.15 in January 2020. Those fuel prices have risen twice this year alone, in February and March. High exchange rates on the parallel market are also contributing to urban wars. They contribute to general price increases, which are compounded by high and growing transport fares for people and for foodstuffs. The higher fares are driven by roads and bridges damaged by rainfall and by restrictions on public transport operators. Fortunate Moyo, a mother of three, says that she is finding it difficult to cope with the galloping cost of living.
For example, if you take the prices of basic goods and services, you realize that they have gone up. And they keep going up. And in this, with this particular government, there doesn't seem to be any remedy for that, to say, okay, so the price of goods has gone up this much, let's try and control. There is no form of control whatsoever. And that is, it makes living very difficult. Your monthly budget last month or this month is totally different. It's going to be totally different 3 weeks or 2 weeks down the line, because everything goes up. Fuel goes up, goods and services, they go up and all that. It's even difficult to budget because we're just working for food only.
Moyo says while ZIMSTAT sets the poverty datum line at US $320, even that amount is not adequate given the high rate of inflation. Nozipo Dube is a 35-year-old woman and mother of three. She agrees with Moyo, saying financial hardship is felt more keenly in urban areas because of municipal rates and charges, which in the case of Bulawayo were increased by over 400% early this year amid protests from hard-pressed residents.
And generally, if you look at the purchasing power of a dollar from last year to this year, and just put it basically how many loaves of bread it can afford, we're having less and less income, but the prices are actually increasing in as much as the government is saying inflation has been controlled. We don't understand how that is working.
Dube says consumers also have problems accessing Zimbabwean dollars. As a result, she says they are forced to pay for basic goods and services with expensive alternatives like mobile money and electronic payments, for which customers must pay a higher rate. Winnet Mlambo, a civil servant and mother of two, says she cannot make ends meet with her salary.
You cannot even afford the basic commodities that you need. Firstly, you've got rentals to pay for. Now, rentals are ranging. I'm paying close to about 80 US dollars, and that's coming from that salary. You need to eat. You've got kids that go to school. You can't even pay for school fees, let alone transport for you to go to work. Personally, I get less than 200 US dollars a month, and we have to live on that. I have kids.
FuseNet says the 2021 harvest is expected to be above average and may improve access to food. But heavy rainfall and fertilizer shortages have harmed some crops in parts of the country's southern, eastern and central areas. The report notes that the economy is already burdened by over 200,000 unemployed people who have been driven from South Africa and Botswana due to COVID-19. And the closing of land borders has led to a drop in remittances, petty trade and cheaper goods, including imports of maize from its neighbors. Observers say a combination of all these factors could mean a challenging year for Zimbabwe's urban consumers and in particular the poor. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Rights activists in Cameroon have condemned a 5-year jail sentence given to two men for, quote, attempted homosexuality, end quote, and public indecency. A lawyer for the two who were arrested for wearing women's clothing in a restaurant say they are preparing an appeal. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
In a statement, Human Rights Watch describes the jail sentence issued by the court as harsh. The two men, Njeken Loik, also known as Shakiru, and Mose Roland, also known as Patricia, were arrested in the coastal city of Douala on February 8. Police said they were wearing typically female clothing while eating in a restaurant. Prosecutors charged them with attempted homosexual conduct, public indecency, and non-possession of their national identity cards. They pleaded not guilty to the charge of attempted homosexuality. Tamfu Richard is one of the lawyers defending Shakiru and Patricia. He says justice was not done during the trial.
We consider the decision to be too severe against this accused person because no evidence was produced before the court to sentence our clients on charges of attempted homosexuality, public indecency, non-possession of ID cards. So our next action will be to file an appeal before the appeal court, and we hope that before the court of appeal, we'll be able to make sure that justice is done at that level.
Human Rights Watch said Shakiru and Patricia, after their arrest in February, were taken to the overcrowded Douala Central Prison, where they reported being beaten and insulted by guards and other inmates. The activists say for men identifying as women, 5 years in a Cameroonian men's prison can amount to a death sentence. Human Rights Watch calls on Cameroon authorities to release them and vacate the charges immediately. Rights lawyer Alice Nkom says the sentence indicates how LGBTQ people continue to be persecuted in Cameroon. She says the international community should intervene to force Cameroon to respect the rights of its citizens. Nkom says they will fight to make sure LGBTQ minorities in Cameroon are given their rights.
We're waiting to obtain a copy of the decision to know the motivations that allow this result. We have 10 days to file an appeal, and the deadline of doing so expires on May 21st. The judge did not apply any attenuating circumstance, neither the numerous violations of the laws, nor the violations of the general principles of law, nor the jurisprudence of the Supreme Court.
Human Rights Watch says Shakiru and Patricia are the latest victims of a system plagued by absolute disregard for the due process rights of people targeted based on sexual orientation or gender identity. It calls on Cameroon to repeal its anti-homosexuality laws and stop interfering in the private lives of Cameroonians. Contacted by phone, Cameroon's Minister of Communication and Government spokesperson, René Emmanuel Sadi, declined to comment on the sentence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Next, Morocco will host a military exercise next month involving 5,000 troops from 9 countries, including Egypt and Tunisia. The exercise will take place across 3 continents. The armed forces of dozens of other countries will participate as observers as well. For more on the African Lion military exercise, former deputy commander of the U.S. Africa Command, retired Vice Admiral Michael Franken, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shenawi. Here's a clip of their conversation.
So this exercise has grown from a mere Morocco and United States Marine Corps exercise in 2002, I recall, to something that is now multi-domain, meaning it's air, surface, ship, and also land, and also space involvements to joint, meaning multiple services and multinational, almost 20 or 25 nations involved with this exercise. So this has been a foundational approach to exercise the skills across multiple domains, which, for instance, to communicate with a satellite in the field today, years ago, it was via HF communication, which is point-to-point as much as the high-frequency radio couldn't communicate. Today, it's through satellite communications, multiple satellites stretched across multiple continents, which is indicative of the type of exercise that Africa Lion has grown into. Multiple nations stretched across four different continents that I can think of, maybe five now, and it exercises the three Ds: diplomacy, development, and contingency responses associated with the defense.
Military officials from the United States and Morocco met in January to prepare for the exercise in June. Why would this military exercise require such advanced planning for almost 6 months?
Well, there is no single nation that has the playbook on contingency operations. Certainly the knowledge base that Morocco and the professionalism that Moroccan armed forces bring, and the diplomatic forces and the educators and the logisticians on the ground add demonstrably to this operation. But no single nation can do this alone. So the United States has seen that we need expertise in Africa, and the international community has agreed with that. So we have brought African partners into helping Africa solutions, which we've seen can be relatable across the globe, from Central Asia to the Middle East. So take, for instance, in some of the operations that we're doing, air-to-air refueling. Now, to do this is certainly an Air Force operation. Big wing tankers, fighter aircraft, support aircraft, refueling. The logistics associated with that are immense, as are the technical challenges. So this planning stretches well into the execution phase and lessons learned. And soon, if you do this over and over again, it becomes rather fundamental to how you operate. We also do a thing called forcible entry operations. And in this case, it's vertical assault, meaning parachute operations. Now, these two are very complex and require multiple nations, multiple rules of engagement, from little things like how the weapons are carried and in what condition, to who feeds the soldier in the field, and how the communication and the cryptology associated with the communication. All these things are immensely complex, and they require the expertise that starts years in advance.
That was the former deputy commander of U.S. Africa Command, retired Vice Admiral Michael Franken, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shanawi. Next, in Kenya, a musician who calls himself KMRU grew up playing the guitar, but now he writes songs using kitchen utensils and car horns. I spoke with him about his music and the influence of the past on the present. If you mention the name Joseph Kamaru to fans of Kenyan music, they will probably think of songs like this. This song is called Gathoni, recorded by Kamaru and his band decades ago. Kamaru was one of Kenya's most famous 20th century musicians. He passed away in 2018 and is known for songs with jangling guitar, galloping beats, and wry, soulful lyrics. But these days, another Joseph Kamaru is making a name in Kenya's music scene. The younger Kamaru is the grandson of the elder superstar, yet his music sounds very different. This song is called Opaque, a track from one of the younger Kamaru's latest albums, Opaquer. To some listeners, this may hardly sound like music at all, but ambient music, as it's called, is a genre with a global following. And Kamaru, whose stage name is KMRU, is part of a small but growing group of East African musicians making ambient tunes.
Ambient music is more relatable to like surrounding or like the environment. There's no like beat with drums or like acoustic instruments. It's more of like the surrounding sounds. So for example, if I go outside, I can hear like a bird chirp, and maybe the bird like chirping has like a rhythm in it, and I can use like that rhythm. Or like different objects outside have their own rhythms or like patterns, which now for my music I use that as instruments and like build something which is a bit musical to listen to.
Kamaru makes his music by capturing natural sounds, and he points his microphone at just about anything. Drops of water, a squealing baby, airport's intercom announcements. Kamaru edits and mixes all these sounds with electronic tones on a computer to produce songs.
When I'm with my recorder outside, when I hit record, it's like I'm already in the studio composing.
Kamaru didn't begin with ambient music. His musical roots are in his grandfather's songs, like this one called Charyaungi.
I bought like my first guitar, I think in 2012, and my direction of music was mostly like playing the guitar, the acoustic guitar, and also like from my grandfather's background, I used to go to his home and jam with him and play along together on some of his songs. He taught me like some basic chords.
But about 5 years ago, while studying music technology at university, Kamaru discovered electronic music. He's since performed festivals and concerts around the world, but he says his art is best enjoyed in more intimate environments.
Best context to like listen to like this kind of music, experimental, ambient, electroacoustic music. Lately, I've been like diving more into like installation spaces where people can experience like different projects in like physical spaces or like art galleries or like museums where it's more of like a sound sculpture, like a sound piece.
Kamaru says he knows around 20 other ambient musicians in Kenya, but he admits it's not for everyone. Even his grandfather wasn't a fan of electronic music. Still, grandfather and grandson had hoped to record some songs together. Sadly, that never happened, but the younger Kamaru is now working to archive and reissue his grandfather's songs. And while digging through the old records, he made a surprising discovery.
I came across like this record called Superior Japan, where he had traveled to Japan with like the president, and before the record starts, you can hear like the aircraft like taking off and everything.
Hearing these sounds, he realized there was a connection between his ambient music and his grandfather's rock music, after all.
And this is like something which I related to because I saw the connection he had also with the environment. Doing this project and listening to his words now, I think it connects.
But he says the most important thing he learned from his grandfather has nothing to do with style or technique at all.
I learned so much, for example, of just being honest, and it's more of like not the practical side of like composition, but like knowing myself as an artist, and yeah.
And that's a lesson for any musician, no matter what instrument they play. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Washington. VOA's Bambara service reports that gunmen attacked the small town of Tominion in the center of Mali today. Reports say militants are trying to seize a local military outpost. VOA spoke with villagers who say three people have been killed so far. Mali's army issued a communique saying it has arrested 20 militants in the three frontier regions. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, please visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our editor, Paul Alexander, thank you for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.